Blog Talk Radio.
In the beginning was the beat, and the beat was the rhythm of God, and the rhythm of God is the harmony of humanity, and where there is harmony, there is peace.
Family, and welcome to Dare to Win, the Us Lifting Us weekly radio broadcast, where we have a sober conversation about the plight and condition of Black people and the imperative to build a global cooperative economy that can put us back on the path to liberation and sovereignty. My name is Brother Kimbizi. I will be your host for this evening's broadcast. And tonight we are having a conversation about emergency preparedness. How do we prepare for the coming change following COVID-19? I'm joined tonight by another board member of Us Lifting Us, Sister Yakira. And we're going to get underway very shortly. But just want to let you know that to join the conversation tonight, call 929-477-2789 and press the number 1 on your phone if you want to make a comment or ask a question. If you're on your computer, go to www.usliftingus.com. That's USLIFTINGUS.com. Click on the Ulu Radio tab, then click on Listen Live, and that will take you into the Blog Talk Radio studio. So let me welcome Sister Yakira. Sister Yakira, are you there, and how are you feeling this evening?
Yes, I am, Brother Kimbizi, and thank you for inviting me to join you this evening. And I'm feeling just great.
Well, that's good to hear. We want to invite everyone to become a part of this conversation because I think all of us are feeling the impact of COVID-19 virus and how it's playing out across the country and certainly around the world. And if we hadn't thought about it before, we realize that things are shifting dramatically. And so we have to adapt and shift our thinking as well. One of the things that's becoming apparently clear to me is that the federal government is being hollowed out, and the role that the federal government used to play in this country in times of crisis is being handed over to global corporations and these U.S. firms supposedly to do the work. So that's a very unsettling development for those of us that are watching what is unfolding. So as the federal government abdicates its role and responsibility, as they become a source of misinformation and disinformation, as briefings that should keep us abreast of what is happening are turned into political campaign and re-election campaigns for number 45, it's very clear that it's important what we in our local communities are doing day to day, week to week, and month to month. And it's going to be very important for the well-being of our communities that we have the latest information and that we have prepared ourselves and positioned ourselves in such a way that we can respond effectively and intelligently. So, Sister Yukira, if you're ready to get started, let's jump into the question, emergency preparedness. What is it and how do we prepare for the coming change following COVID-19? We don't know how long this is going to run its course, it well into the summer, but whenever it begins to wane and we find ourselves on the backside of things, what should we be doing both now and be prepared to do as we get deeper into the warmer months and then even into the fall and the winter?
Okay. Thank you, Brother Kimbizi. First of all, I'd like to just kind of give a definition that was developed by the National CERT program, which is the Community Emergency Response Team, and which is an arm of the Federal Emergency Management Agency, which most people know as FEMA, which is part of the Department of Homeland Security. Now, I want to share this with you because I've been trained as a CERT, as a community response team member, since 2018, because I think things are changing in this country. And most of the time, our communities are just not prepared to adapt and deal with a crisis. We react, but not necessarily prepare and plan for how we are going to respond other than react and panic. And so just want to give a couple of definitions. According to FEMA, emergency preparedness is basically the ability of citizens to survive a catastrophic disaster such as a hurricane, a tornado, an earthquake, or other natural or man-made disaster. Emergency preparedness often involves training, planning, coordination, and basic disaster survival and rescue skills to improve the ability of local people to survive and safely help others until first responders and other assistance arrives. Now, community-based emergency preparedness, it trains local citizens to be prepared for and respond to anticipated disruptions and potential hazards following a disaster, again, whether it's natural or man-made. And as individuals, we can and we should prepare our homes and our families to cope during those critical periods. Now, neighborhood preparedness enhances our ability of individuals, the ability of individuals and neighbors and neighborhoods to reduce the emergency response needs so that we can manage our existing resources until professional assistance comes available. But, you know, we know that historically we in our communities can't rely on our governmental agencies to come to our rescue. I'm sure most people remember Katrina and even Puerto Rico. Those are good examples of when our government will neglect our communities. And, you know, even how economics have played out even across this country, our communities are always neglected and are targeted for exploitation. So I think we need to look at our community and family preparedness from an indigenous standpoint. And so for the purpose of tonight's talk, I wanted to have a conversation around how our people need to prepare, not only for a natural disaster emergency, but for governmentally imposed state of emergencies, especially in light of the coming economic reset. Now, this current COVID-19 crisis is likely to trigger, I think, an enforced state of emergency if the infections and the deaths continue to spread like they are anticipating. I think, you know, more states may start locking down their states and enforce that with the military. And then I think we will also have food shortages as a result of businesses shutting down and employees getting sick and the need to protect employees. And I think we'll also see increased food prices. And months later, we may even see increased homelessness as the economy changes and as we try to bounce back from the quarantine state that we're in today. So these are just some of the things that we got to anticipate in this crisis. Now,
I like what you're making us aware of. We're already seeing the shutdown of major parts of the economy. So you're absolutely right. This is a health epidemic that is morphing simultaneously into an economic crisis of a magnitude most of us have not seen before. And you're also right that all of these possibilities are on the horizon. And so it's good that we're having this conversation tonight so that we really can be forward thinking, put ourselves in a posture of preparedness, so we don't find ourselves reacting and worst of all, reacting in a panic. So continue with what you're saying, Sister Yakira.
Yeah. You hit the nail on the head when you said that we don't need to react in panic, in a panic mode. You know, we know that when people are unprepared and a crisis happens, they are more likely to panic and even make life-threatening mistakes or even die in the process. And we also know that when we have a plan, we are calmer, we think more clearly, and we're more likely to be in a position to help others. And again, I also believe because of my training that if you don't know how to keep yourself safe in a crisis, you also become a part of the problem. And what I also learned in my training is that in a catastrophe or in a state of emergency or an emergency, the police, because most people still call the police when there's a crisis or something happens. The police in a crisis are not necessarily, they're not obligated to respond to us after a 911 call. Their first priority is continuity of the government. They are employees of the government.
Let's pause right there, because I think that's a critical point that should not be lost on any of us, because you're absolutely right. We find ourselves in the midst of catastrophic events. The first reaction is to dial 911. As you say, their first priority is the continuity of the government. And if we've ever had to call 911 in a non-emergency situation, we know that that still can be a 30-minute response time before anyone rolls up to offer assistance. And so, given the magnitude of what we're looking at, we would fool ourselves to think that all we had to do was dial 911. And assistance would be coming over the hill. So, excellent point for us to think about. I know when you said that, it struck me that they're really not in emergency mode necessarily. I mean, that's the secondary thing. After they have made sure that whatever they mean by continuity of government is maintained. By the way, this is getting good, folks. I'm certainly hoping that you're taking this information down, you're writing notes. To join the conversation, call 929-477-2789 and press the number 1 on your phone. If you're listening via your computer, go to our website, www.usliftingus.com. You'll see a live radio tab. Click on that and then click on Listen Live, and you can ask Sister Yakira a question or make your comment. I'm sorry to interrupt you, Sister Yakira. Go ahead with what you were saying.
No. I look forward to those listeners on the call to call in and share their wisdom as well. And if there are questions that I can answer, I'd be happy to. But what I wanted to do tonight is to present 3 key areas of consideration to help us prepare for an emergency as indigenous people of the land and people that this government is not necessarily trying to protect. And so my 3 points that I'd like our listeners to consider is, 1, first and foremost, that we need to have a communal or culturally based mindset through every crisis we face. 2, I like to talk about some practical considerations during a crisis. And then 3, let's look at some natural disaster preparedness types of things we need to think about and prepare for. So, of course, obviously, we'll face different potential emergencies in different conditions during different activities. You know, there's natural disasters. There may be a terrorist attack. You know, maybe, you know, like we have today, a viral attack. I call the COVID-19. It's a viral attack or plague even. So regardless of the emergency, it is wise for us to have the right mindset and have some practical skills and to have a plan in the event of a natural or man-made disaster. And so with regards to my first point, I'd just like to offer some things to consider. Again, we need to make sure we're going to have a culturally based mindset and really be cooperative in our survival techniques. And in doing that, I like to suggest that we make sure first and foremost that we are observant, that we stay alert and don't panic. Because that's just, you know, when we panic, we're not thinking clearly. And so we need to make sure we just notice what's going on around us at all times, whether it be in our households and in the community or in the state or the nation, for that matter. Next point, I think we should make sure we have a mindset of peace and harmony and cooperation. You know, I've seen time and time again when there's a crisis, people start fighting among themselves, whether it's a fight for control or a fight because they're afraid and they don't know what else to do, and that's just a response, a reaction. But as indigenous people, we need to really try to keep peace and harmony among us, and then work together to take care of our people, take care of each other. And my next thought, again, keeping a culturally based mindset, is that we need to ensure that we have order among us. We need to make sure if we're in a group of people or even in our household that we guard against chaos and learn practical survival techniques before we need them. Not wait till something happens and then we don't know what to do. We need to make sure we learn some survival techniques beforehand and then make sure we have a plan as to how we're going to organize in that crisis. Another thing I think we should consider is to promote a cooperative culture in our community, especially if it gets to the point where supplies and food are not accessible like in the local stores, because, you know, we have been trained very well that when we need something, we go to Walmart or we go to some other, you know, big box store and pick up what we want. But if we can't get to those facilities or the supplies that they would normally stock are not there, we need to learn how to cooperate in order to maintain. And then, because of being cooperative, I think we need to explore trading among each other, bartering, even loaning our resources, whether it's equipment or time or our household, just loaning something. And even to the point of where there, we may even have medicine that we might need to share with someone else, and they may have clean water. We need to be prepared to do some exchanging of resources if we don't have access to those supplies at one of these stores. I remember going to Charlotte last year and saw that they had a free store. So people would bring in items and put it on the shelf, and then they would take items that they needed. So it was more like a barterer or a trade kind of store, but they didn't have to spend any money. Now, that's a cooperative way of surviving, especially when you don't have a lot. Another thing we might have to consider doing from a cultural standpoint is have pitch-in meals. If we, you know, somebody may have meat, others might have potatoes, somebody else may have vegetables, but nobody has everything. So why not organize some pitch-in meals and maybe rotate it around, because we are building, we still need to ensure that no matter what the emergency is, we have a tight community that we can help each other out. We can be there for each other and support each other. And then another thing that we have to consider in a crisis is security. Of course, back during Jim Crow times, which, you know, they're not too far from us today. There have been others that have come into our communities and have intimidated or abused our families, even family members, even to the point of death. And I think in a crisis, we need to make sure we have security teams set up to protect our families and our neighborhoods from violence and from fear mongers. And it may even come a point in time, I hope not, that we, but I think it's better to be prepared than not, to even be organized to have night watch teams and day watch teams, because if resources get scarce, and some families have some resources and others don't, those who don't might be showing up at your doorstep to get what they want. And so we need to, you know, I believe in being communal first, but also, you know, make sure we have safety teams so that we can protect our families and our communities. And the last point, and under this last tip, at least thought to consider, is that no matter what we do, we need to make sure our youth, those who are 40 and under, understand how vital they are to keeping the peace in our communities and how vital they are to helping us to survive. Because, you know, I think if we don't, then, you know, they may think, you know, that they just may feel disenfranchised and may view us like they view the police. And we just can't afford for our youth, our young people, to not know that we care about them during a crisis.
That's absolutely true. I was thinking, Sister Yukira, as you were speaking, that when you say first of all, and I agree with you 100%, the very first step is this culturally based mindset and the cooperative survival techniques. I would ask, doesn't that also imply people being practiced in their spiritual, whatever that is, if you do meditation, if you do prayer, if you do yoga? I heard someone say that it's hard to build a house in the middle of a hurricane. And so what that says to me is, while we have this time where, you know, we're socially distancing, we're staying pretty much in our own neighborhoods, in our own homes, let's make sure that as a priority, build into each day that quiet time, so that we can reflect and make the connection with the Creator, with however you language that. But that provides, I think, the real foundation for this culturally based mindset. And we as a people traditionally have relied on our faith as a way of coping and getting through tough times. I mean, we're all familiar with the expression, God will make a way out of no way. And for those of us that have lived through that and really grasped that terminology, we know that it begins with making sure that relationship is strong and tight in times of peace, so that when there is a crisis, we don't fall apart. The other thing I would say on this same point is that us lifting us as an economic development cooperative is based on two very profound ancient African value systems. The first, obviously, is Ma'at, which is truth, justice, righteousness, order, balance, harmony, and reciprocity. And then the second was the system designed by and passed forward to our community by Dr. Malana Karenga, the Nguza Saba, which we're familiar with from the Kwanzaa celebration of unity, self-determination, collective work and responsibility, cooperative economics, purpose, creativity, and faith. So I think that is so fundamental that we become deeply immersed in that cultural mindset, Sister Yukira, that really is our ultimate protection, whether we're in peaceful times or times that are a little more unsettling. And so I would just remind our listeners to to make sure that the preparation for this crisis should have already begun. But certainly while we have these days and weeks of relative calm, let's make sure that we are focused on developing this culturally based mindset, tuning into our spiritual practice in a very disciplined and consistent way, and really loving ourselves, our families, and our neighbors. If you're walking your neighborhood to get your exercise, you know, you can social distance, but it's a good time just to wave, throw up a hand, say hi. If you don't know your neighbor's name, find out what their names are, how they're doing, strike up a conversation. This is the foundation of the network that's going to get us through if things become more difficult down the line. Sister Akira, I'm checking to see if there are any callers. People on the line, I know this is very useful information for you. If you have a question or a comment, please call 929-477-2789 and press the number 1 on your phone. And if you're working, if you're listening via your computer, go to our website, www.usliftingus.com. Click on the radio tab, Ulu radio tab, and then click on Listen Live. We certainly would love to have you join the discussion this evening with your comments and your questions. Sister Yukira, any other points on comments on this first point before we go to our first music break?
No, but I'm really glad that you brought up the spiritual basis that we have as a people, because no matter what crisis we're in, if we hold on to our spiritual foundation, we will get through it. We always do. And so I really appreciate you reminding the audience about that. People have different faiths, but I know my husband particularly likes to look to Psalms 91, that no matter what goes on around us, we'll still survive. And we are covered by the blood. So let's. But I know you got to go to.
Okay.
Go to break.
We're going to take a quick 2-minute break, and we'll be right back. Don't touch that dial. Stay with us. And we're back. That was Lonnie Liston Smith and Garden of Peace. Just kind of soothes the nerves in these kind of unsettling times. My name is Brother Kimbizi, and I'm in conversation with Sister Yukira. Both of us are board members with Us Lifting Us. You're listening to the Thursday night Dare to Win program that is sponsored by Us Lifting Us. We come to you each Thursday evening from 9 to 10, and we're having a conversation about emergency preparedness.
and how do we prepare ourselves for any events that will come and kind of disrupt our normal routine? How do we prepare for the coming change following COVID-19? Sister Yakira, let me, before we go into your second point, I see a caller, last four numbers, 8912. I'm opening your line, 8912. Please tell us your name, where you're calling from, and give us your comment or ask your question. Your line is open.
Yes, greetings, family, and thank you so much for the topic tonight and the very, very useful information. And I'm Brother Thurman calling from Richmond, and Us Lifting Us member. And I'd like to just make sure that the family stays reminded that there's never been a time since the invaders first started attacking us, the attack has never, ever ended. So we're actually always in a state of emergency. War is being waged against us, and most of us, large numbers of us, are going about life as if that's not happening. And with what I just said in mind, we should always, and certainly at this point, be about learning everything we can about the strategies of survival and so many necessary things that Sister Yakira talked about, including security and the food and gathering up resources. And so if we have not already begun to know those things, as long, I'm sure even in this state that we're in right now, we still know somebody that's got access to a computer or to the internet, and there's volumes and volumes of information that's still there about survival, about prepping, and all of those things. And with regard to the spiritual part, we've got to be calm, as a sister said, and that discipline is very the calmness and discipline, it can make you or break you in a difficult situation. And so it's just like, for example, food. If there's a food shortage, if you already have learned calmness and discipline, it'll be easier for you to eat less. If it was a half a bowl a day of beans, it would be easier. But when we are uncalm, then we could just go off on each other because we want to get our grub on. So I just wanted to add that, and thank you so much for the call tonight.
Well, Brother Thurman, thank you so much for your comment. Much appreciated. I know that as a practice, there's sometimes when you see tension developing between brothers and sisters, as a tactic that we can employ, it's called the Hawaiian prayer, and it's a way of just saying to yourself, before things get really heated, and send loving energy to the person in front of you, and the first thing you want to say is, I love you, and then you, I mean, you, not verbally, but mentally, I love you. I am sorry. Please forgive me. And thank you. Just take yourself through that mental exercise when you're confronted with people who are trying to go off, as a way of stilling yourself and keeping your options open for how you might respond in the situation rather than to react. Sister Yakira, let's jump back into... You finished your first point on a culturally based mindset. What was the second point that you wanted to share?
That is some practical considerations during a crisis. Now, during this COVID-19 crisis, of course, a lot of people have been told to self-quarantine, both if they are maybe a little ill, or if they are just don't want to be around people who are. And so the nation has pushed the circumstance to ensure that people stay at home and self-quarantine, including businesses are shutting down. So during that time, of course, that affects people's livelihoods, their economics, their family budgets. And so, of course, there's a lot of stress that's happening within households families about paying their bills. Now, what for those people who may be listening on this call, if they aren't already aware, there are companies who have who are sharing with their, or shall I say, they are waiving payments to their companies like AT&T, Sprint, you know, some other companies, so that for the next 2, maybe even 3 months, you don't have to pay those bills, especially if you've been, you know, impacted by COVID-19. And I've also heard where some landlords and maybe even some mortgage companies are also postponing or reducing the rent payment so that people can stay in their homes without fear of being evicted, because, you know, the whole nation's kind of come to a standstill. So I just want people to know that you don't have to, you know, that don't panic because of these bills weighing in on you, and just to contact your utility companies, contact your phone companies, contact your landlord and your mortgage company, the banks, and talk with them about, you know, waiving the next 2 or 3 months of your rent, because some of them are doing that. And then, of course, there's the CARES Act, which is providing some resources for individuals and for businesses to ensure that we help people, that they help people during this crisis. So that's just some practical things to kind of help make sure you worry less, and you can, you know, take this time to kind of reconnect with the Creator and your family, and just kind of, you know, de-stress, because stress by itself will also make you sick. It compromises your immune system, and we are encouraging you to kind of stay in peace. Stay calm, as Brother Thurman mentioned earlier, and so that you can stay healthy. So that was one point under the practical considerations. Another point I'd like to encourage our listeners to do is to start to grow your own food. Even if you don't have a backyard or a front yard, you can do some container gardening, you know, with some flower pots. Inside your home, on your patio, in your front porch, your back porch, and if you have a little land, maybe even some raised bed gardens, start to plant and grow something. Potatoes are the easiest thing to grow. Tomatoes come second, and I tell you, if you just start, you'll be surprised, and even get the kids involved if you have children or grandchildren. They will love to work in the soil. And so grow your own food and freeze food, you know, especially to get help you through some times when you can't, you don't have, it's not harvesting season. And so you can pull stuff out of the freezer, of course. And for the, we people buy canned goods now, but of course I remember a time when we used to, you know, can our own vegetables that we grew in our garden. So, you know, I think we need to, you know, pick back up some of those old ways because we might need them.
I think another, Yukira, if our audience doesn't hear anything else tonight, they need to give some serious thought to, like you said, potatoes, tomatoes. What was the other thing that you said would be?
Some real easy ones to grow is zucchini and squash. Salad, lettuce is very easy to grow. And this is planting season right now.
Right.
So it's time to get some starter plants and plant some vegetables in pots. And, you know, in just about 4 to 6 weeks, you're going to have food to eat.
So that's good news. So in other words, if we follow that bit of advice, This is the 1st of April. Come May, mid-May, your first, you should have some product right then. And then if you do that again, over the next, the course of the next 6 to 8, 12 weeks, you could have some food growing.
If you, there are seasons that you plant, then this is planting season for your spring and summer crops. And then, you know, after you harvest and finish out your summer crop, you plant your fall crop, and you can eat all year round, okay? And again, and what you don't, what you, and you'll probably grow enough that you can freeze a lot of it, freeze and can it, and you can still eat the, you know, seasonal food year round.
Right.
But I encourage those who can contact even your local 4-H department or extension from the universities about growing food, or libraries tend to offer some classes on how to grow foods and have master gardeners. So take advantage of this time that you're not working.
Okay.
And YouTube offers a lot of videos to help people understand how to grow some of the basic things and how to grow an abundance, a harvest of it. So that is another thing to do. So
thank you.
Another point I wanted to make about returning to our old ways is to take this time when people are at home and not at work to get back to some of the old ways of talking with people in your household and telling stories and going on walks and spending time just with neighbors. We've been so busy, you know, working, and always doing something on some project till we oftentimes miss out on knowing our neighbors and telling stories of our past, of our family, and learning about each other. So this is a time to do that. And that still, you know, that helps us to stay connected, because people think that since self-quarantining means to self-isolate, and that's not what self-quarantine actually means. It just means to protect yourself from others who may be exposed to the virus, but that doesn't mean to withdraw from the communal connections. So.
That's a good point. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
That's a very
mm-hmm.
good point. Because I think
now,
too often we hear quarantine and we think disconnect, and you're saying
mm-hmm.
no, create the distance, but stay in community, stay in communication with each other.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So thank you.
Yeah. Yeah. And in an emergency, there are things, practical things we need to do as well, which I'll get further into in my third point. But right now, I just want to make sure I remind people to have a reserve of bottled water or be able to boil your water to ensure that you have a clean source of water to drink, because people can dehydrate at any time just by not drinking enough getting enough hydration. And water is, of course, the first and foremost thing we need to drink. But, you know, you can also add some beverages, a flavor to it for those who don't like to drink water. And we also need to be prepared, too, that if the electricity goes out for whatever, if there's a natural disaster, hurricane, tornado, earthquake, that if the electricity goes out, do our people know how to build a fire, even if they don't have matches or a lighter? Do we have something that we can, you know, a lot of people do have grills in their backyard and they can cook on a grill, do we know how to light that fire? If we don't have matches or a lighter, do we know how to camp, have an experience camping outdoors? Now, of course, a lot of, you know, we still have family. We do have people we can go over another person's house a neighbor or friend's house or another relative's house, if our power goes out or if, you know, a tree falls on our homes, we can go someplace. But in the event that it is major and that's not an option, we need to be prepared to have an outdoor experience. And if you're not prepared, you won't know what to do.
Sister Yakira, very quickly, how do you start a fire if you don't have a match? What would you tell the people?
Well, there are a couple of things you can do. If you have glasses, I mean, I know most people don't walk around with a magnifying glass in their pocket, but there a lot of people do wear glasses. And so if the sun is high and you use your the lens from the glass to point and aim and let it, you know, start to focus on dried grass and dried wood, you know, because of course even if you have the right sun, and this is of course during daylight hours, because of course you can't use that at night. But there are ways you can also start a fire when the sun's not out. And there's a lot to get into. I don't think I can cover everything, but what I'd like to suggest people do is that there are lots of YouTube videos about how to start a fire in a camping environment without any matches. And so they can Google that on YouTube, and there's a variety of different ways. And you can also go to get a stick. There's a stick that you can purchase, like from a Walmart or a grocery store, that you can use to get a spark so that you can actually start a fire. And that's one of those items that I would encourage people to have in their backpack, the emergency backpack, which we're going to get into a little bit later, is to have a little block that you can have. Sure, I encourage people to have matches. Sure, have a lighter. But, you know, if it rains or those matches get wet, then you're going to need something else that can withstand, you know, the elements in that way. But I would just encourage, because there's so much to get into when it comes to building a survival kit. We can't get into all of it, but I will offer and work with Ulu to make available a survival list for backpacks for a 3-day emergency pack kit, for a 2-week kit, and for a 1-month kit. So I'll make that available after this call. Another thing we need to do is to remember how to practice good hygiene in an emergency, so that we can, of course, avoid sickness and disease. You know, if you recall during Katrina, when the toilets went out and, you know, people were in that stadium for too long, things got backed up and hygiene was poor and people got sick. And so we need to ensure that people have a plan as to how to dispose of human waste and how to practice good hygiene during an emergency so that, you know, people will stay healthy. Okay?
Okay. Sister Yakira, the clock is racing. Can you jump ahead to your third point and see if we can tie this together with cooperative economics and Ulu's plan for how we go forward?
Sure. Well, my third point is to, again, it connects with what I just talked about as far as having a plan for natural disaster and being prepared for that. So my first thing is to encourage people to have a family care plan. in the home, everyone needs to know how to get out of the house if there's a fire or an earthquake or something. You need to have an escape plan. And then if there's something that happens outside, may have to have may have to shelter in place inside the home. And then sheltering in place in the crisis. Of course, we all know, you know, to have flashlights and batteries and candles. If, you know, if you can be safe, we have, you know, making sure children don't bump into candles and start a fire. But making sure that there's a plan to get out if you need to, and a plan to shelter in place. And then the shelter in place basically means just finding a safe location indoors and staying there until it's clear, until you're given an all clear sign, and then or if you're just told to evacuate. And then, and of course, shelter in place varies per environment. You may have to shelter in place at home, or shelter in place at work, or shelter in place at a school. And so that varies. But if you, depending on the circumstance, you also need to make sure, you know, whatever room you go in, that you can either lock it or unlock it from inside. You have to plan an evacuation, to plan for an evacuation. Assemble an emergency backpack or kit. Now, a general rule of thumb is to pack supplies for each person to survive for 3 days without having to go back home, or 2 weeks, and then 1 month. That's a general rule of thumb, that you should have a kit for each to have enough supplies for 3 days, 2 weeks, or a month. So, and that's like a backpack for each member of your family. And then, you know, have a kit at home, a backpack at home, a pack at work, possibly, and then a kit in the car, in your trunk. If you feel like you might have to evacuate. And then there's also in your community, it's also good to have a map of your community to know what kind of escape routes to plan for. Because if in your neighborhood the roads are blocked off, whether because of a state of emergency or earthquake, or maybe, you know, a fire or something, then do you have another route to get out of your neighborhood? And so just be, you know, kind of have a plan for that, know the different routes. And then the last thing I want to say, because if there's a crisis in the neighborhood or in your home, and there's physical trauma to the body, I always encourage people to know your ABS. Just think ABS, airway, bleeding, or shock. Make sure if there's a trauma to a person's body that they're breathing. And if there's trauma, you know, just make sure they get air. And the B stands for bleeding. If there's bleeding, you got to stop the bleeding. You know, and that's putting pressure on or tying it off so that they don't bleed out. And then the S stands for shock. If they are just so disoriented and not understanding what's going on, they really need to be attended to as well, because they may have a brain injury. And so in all of it, we're just trying to mitigate loss of life and damage to property, so that we can do and we just have to do some planning for all that.
Well, you know, Sister Yakira, this has been so helpful that the time has just gotten completely away, and clearly we're going to have to do a part two on this segment, and we will get to that very soon, probably next week even. But personally, I just want to say thank you. You've shared a wealth of information, and I'm sure people who are listening on the call has kind of given them food for thought, a plan of action if they didn't already have it, resources that they can check on their own. And this is just Ulu's way of being a resource for our family. This too is cooperative economics. And so we just want to say to our members, as Sister Yakira said, stay safe and calm, and be prepared. Let's follow these tips that she has given to us and make sure that we're doing everything that we need to do to come through this crisis and to be in a better position on the other side. I think one of the things that I sense that the Creator is up to is that we are being positioned to be in a much stronger position when all of this is said and done. So on that note, we're going to go out on Quiet Moments by Lonnie Smith. We invite our listeners to join us next Thursday night at 9 o'clock. I think we're going to try to get it. We can't get it in next week, but the following week we'll get in part two. So, Brother Thurman, thank you for your call. Other listeners on the line, thank you for tuning in. Sister Yakira, thank you for sharing from your heart and this wealth of experience. You've blessed us. And family, we'll see each other next time. Until then, peace.
And good night, everyone.